beautiful. Pleasure to welcome you this morning to this brief program, the groundbreaking ceremony for the Health, Physical Education, and Recreation Building. When I was reviewing the program this morning and saw that the program was opening with the last song, official song, last flag, I thought that the song was perhaps doubly appropriate. The words, as most Alaskans know, was composed by Marie Drake, who at the time was Deputy Commissioner of Education in Juneau. She wrote a poem, and it was widely accepted about Alaska, a very good poem, and it thrilled the hearts of Alaska. Then a woman up in Haines, I suppose, but actually at Chilkoot Barracks, the Eleanor Dusenberry, the wife of the commanding officer of Fort William H. Stewart, was musically talented, and she took the poem and put the music to it. And I thought this morning, now that was an early example of very good cooperation and harmony between our educational interests and our military people here in Alaska. Today we're very pleased to have with us a senior member of our Board of Regents, a native son of Alaska, a graduate in the class of 1934, a member of the board since 1948, and so he has served with all four of our university presidents. Presently, chairman of the Building Program Committee and vice president of the Board of Regents, Mr. William A. O'Neill. Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you, Bill. On an occasion like today, why I'm reminded of our first president of the university, the highly esteemed Dr. Bunnell, whom on occasion when he was called on to speak would say, well, I didn't expect to be called upon, but I just happened to have a few notes that I've been carrying around for some time. So I'll just read from a few notes that I have been carrying around since I was advised of my role in this occasion. Governor Egan and members of the faculty, staff, and students, alumni, and friends of the university. Last night, many of us attended an athletic awards banquet, and it was a wonderful occasion. It was an occasion to be proud of, to see the young men and women receive awards who have brought great credit to the university through their athletic achievements. The ceremony here is directly related. Last night, as the awards were being presented, I was thinking of the accomplishments of these students and coaches who have risen so far above the facilities they have had to use and work with. I was ashamed to think that we have not been able to provide them earlier with adequate facilities and equipment. But now it is a comforting feeling to know that we are here to take the first official step toward providing these facilities. When Dean Cashin told me yesterday of the role I was to play here today by saying a few words, I said, that's fine. All I have to do is get up and say, we are gathered here to break ground for a new gymnasium, so let's get at it and start digging. But this building deserves the attention and time here now relative to the time that has already been spent upon it. I do not need a prepared speech to talk about the many years that have led up to this day, but if I let myself ramble on, you would be listening to me, if you had the fortitude, long after the sun had set below the yard arm. This building is not yet built, but it already has a long history. Figuratively speaking, it is almost a gray-bearded old man. And those of us who have been working on it for so long can almost envision the scars of long use and wear. Maybe it is because we are somewhat worn and scarred ourselves. I will not bore you with all the gory details of its history, but we are now relieved and happy to know that at long last our people will have the quarters they so richly deserve. 10 years ago, this building first appeared on the list for early construction. 8 years ago, the first money was appropriated by the territorial legislature for its planning. Since then, 2 normal college lifetimes have passed. Buildings that were not then considered as important or as necessary have been built. Constitution Hall, Bunnell Building, Engineering Building, and many dormitories. I hope that no other future building will suffer the fate and frustration before the construction as this one has. Although this gymnasium is not yet built, it has already outlived the tenure of 2 presidents. Many early members of the board and almost outlasted Bill Cashman and myself. During this long interval, we have seen this building have top priority only to be set back to the bottom of the list for lack of financing. The long-suffering architect, Mr. Lynn Forrest, has seen his several preliminary plans scuttled because of the change in location, and because due to the change of location, there has been a change of ideas. Our esteemed President Emeritus Ernest N. Paddy has written to Dr. Wood, and I quote, a lot of blood has been spilled on that building, and much of it was mine. And I agree with him. We became a state and things began to happen. This building is now possible because of the support of the people of the state and the legislature who voted for the general obligation bonds that provided the money for its erection, the first money so used through this means of financing. But so much time had transpired and conditions have changed that lo and behold, we were faced with what is known as a supplemental appropriation. We received very favorable attention at the last legislature, and these fine people provided the additional monies necessary to complete the building. Now you can see that the building is practically built. And this building includes the space for the ROTC and our championship rifle team. There is a beautiful gymnasium for our championship basketball team with spectator seating capacity of 3,700 people. A collegiate-sized swimming pool for our future champion swimming teams and water polo teams. Beside the necessary classrooms for the health, physical education, and recreation departments. It will be in use from early morning until late at night, and there is no doubt that it will be the most used building on the campus. When the Regents take a coffee break, as they sometimes do, I'm going to take a swimming break. Besides having the privilege of saying a few words about this building, I also have the honor to present an old friend, a man who has been closely connected with this building and who has unstintingly given of his time and effort for the growth of the university. He has served the territory and state long, well, and ably. Through his many terms in the territorial legislature, president of the Constitutional Convention, interim senator in Congress, and now our highly respected chief of state, Governor Egan,
Well, thank you, Bill O'Neill. I think you really did an able job in telling the story, a long story, of the plans that went into and the frustrations that went into reaching this day in the university's history. And I want to say that when you mentioned having notes with you here today, I thought that perhaps I should inform the audience that I had a few notes a little earlier in the morning, but I didn't really expect that I would need any on this occasion. But it is a real privilege indeed for me to be here and participate in the groundbreaking of this your new physical education and recreational building. It has taken a good many years to get this basic need of the University of Alaska underway to the point where we will actually see construction commence. But I am confident that over the long years to come, as the university campus continues to expand, as the enrollment here, the desire of young people to come here to the University of Alaska to acquire their future education needs, that forever this building will stand as a symbol of the time in the period of great progress of the state of Alaska, when the University of Alaska really did get started on its way to becoming not just the fine institution that it is today, but one of the bulwarks of the educational system of America itself. I just want to say that to everyone who has had a part in working towards the making the your recreational and physical educational building possible, I offer my own personal appreciation, and to the Board of Regents, to President, former President Patty of the University, to President Wood, the present President of the University, and all others. The people of Alaska cannot give too grateful a commendation for the good work that they have accomplished, the good work that they are ever striving for, not only in behalf of the University of Alaska, but for what they know will be in behalf of all of the people of Alaska in years to come. I just want to say again that it's going to be a real pleasure to help you break ground for this grand event. Thank you very much.
Well, now that we've got a nice working crew out here, we thought we might just as well take advantage of it. There are quite a number of people sitting in the front row that we're going to call up to give us a hand with turning some of this round too. So we would like first to have our regional legislators stand by. We're going to take one more picture, but then I want standing by Senators Graham and Representative Baker and Representative Champadose, if he's here, and any other members of the legislature that happen to be present here. And those are the only two. I think you should stand alongside of him, Dr. Wood. Bill, why don't you stand alongside of him? From here on, the formality ends, and we start getting into the digging.
Thank you very much. Who's calling up here now?
Well, we want the legislators to come forward.
Let's get out the government. Everyone's in the community.
It's a pleasure to give you this shovel.
You want to stand alongside?
You want to stand alongside?
Is Representative Sapodos here? Well, I missed a good punchline. I was going to say, in case anyone took their exception to political implications, that I had three past presidents of the Pioneers of Alaska to turn ground for. But we've only got two, both past presidents of Pioneer Igloo Number 4. Well, we need some more help. I'd like to have Dr. Joseph Rebar, the mayor of Fairbanks, and Mr. G.A. Seeliger, president of the Chamber of Congress, come up and get a hand.
Is that enough?
Did they get a picture? Representing the Associated Students, Mr. Patrick Sherrick, president of the student body, and Ms. Martha Bang, representing the women's students. Will they come forward, please? Representing the Alumni Association with Mrs. Audrey Lawford, come forward, please. Good. Representing the Department of Health, Physical Education, and Recreation, Professor Fred Boyle, and representing the Department of Military Science, Lieutenant Colonel Richard A. Byer. Will they come forward, please?
Thank you, Martha. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Very good. Good.
Sure.
Good. And finally, to the men that are actually going to do the leak, our architect, Lume Forrest from Juneau, and representing the builders, Mr. Harold Stevenson. Will they come forward, please?
The grandfather Bell is from Anchorage, Abraham Bailey. Reverend Grand Fairbairn is the Western Master of Mount Pacifica Lodge, number 294, also Anchorage, Keith Morgan. Senior Grand Vicar, Jonathan A. Wilson Jr., the Junior Grand Vicar, Fred L. McQuire, the Grand Tyler, Roy A. A. Larson, the Grand Marshal, E. Huff, and back to you, the Master Architect of the Ceremony, Edward Lee Kendall. And I will introduce myself as last, as Daniel P. Henry, the Grand Secretary. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you, Mr. King. We now to deliver the official welcome, and I'm pleased to present the President of the University, Dr. William Ransom Wood. Dr. Wood. Mr. President, Governor Reagan, distinguished guests, members of the family order, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure to welcome you to this afternoon ceremony, to learn the cornerstone of this
splendid new building now under construction. When it is finished next August, or perhaps sometime before, it will be a most valuable addition to the campus, not only for our academic needs in health, physical education, military science, but as a much-needed student and faculty recreation facility, as a gymnasium, swimming pool, and water room. Of particular significance is the fact that this is the first facility financed under the state bonding program approved by a decisive margin by the people of Alaska at the general election in 1960. For that high vote of confidence and strong support, the university is most appreciative. As president of the university, I extend to the people of Alaska, on behalf of the regents, the faculty, and the students, our heartfelt thanks. Our support derives from all of the people of Alaska. It is our purpose to serve all of Alaska. We are particularly honored to have the governor of this great land, the Honorable William A. Egan, with us today. Governor Egan, please convey to our many loyal friends in government service and in the legislature our warmest thanks for their assistance in making this fine addition to our campus a reality. We hope that the instruction and research and service provided by your university will continue to merit your enthusiastic endorsement and support. The years ahead offer fabulous opportunities for us all and for our children if we continue to invest our resources wisely in enterprises such as this.
President Wood, Grandmaster Johnson, distinguished guests, friends, I am truly delighted to participate in this important event. Many people worked hard in 1960 for passage of the bond issue which made possible this fine gymnasium. It is intensely rewarding to be here today to see the results of that effort. Our University of Alaska has grown in stature during the past few years, and of that there is no doubt. It is now rated as one of the most respected Arctic research institutes on the North American continent, and its enrollment has passed the 1,000 mark. In addition, it has played and must continue to play a leading role in providing Alaska's young men and women with the know-how to be leaders in the expansion of Alaska's economy, to carry on the affairs of state, and to play a dominant role in the realms of education and the arts. As a side effect of this growth, the university assures a substantial year-round payroll and market to the Fairbanks area. It is up to us of this day and this age to provide the academic facilities so vital and necessary if our young men and women are to receive the education essential to carry on the functions of a civilization based on scientific and cultural advancement, and if we are to meet the increased demands of our growing population. This is a duty we cannot shirk. It requires more than lip service. We must also have the foresight to anticipate and the courage to carry out a course of constructive action to meet the needs of the future as well as those of today. In the recent past, the people of Alaska have responded generously to this need. That response, I am proud to say, predates the time when statehood underscored the need for more qualified scientists, engineers, educators, and civic and educational leaders for the new state. As far back as 1957, the then territorial legislature took the commendable and unprecedented action of approving a general obligation bond issue of nearly $2 million for dormitories and other buildings which now have replaced temporary wooden structures first erected in 1922. In 1960, the state took the lead in working for a favorable voter response to the general obligation bond issue, which has financed this gymnasium and other buildings which are rising on this university. It is my hope and my conviction that the people of Alaska will give continued support to this program with a favorable vote on the bond issue, which will be on the ballot next month to provide nearly $6 million more for this purpose. Another reflection of public support for education is the appropriations approved each year by the state legislature. In 1957, total expenditures from the Alaska General Fund for Education amounted to about $11 million a year. In 1962, the appropriation for education in Alaska is nearly $20 million, just about double that of 1957, and most of this was needed because of the increased enrollment that has entered our school system, public and here at the university each year. This not only emphasizes the growing school population of our state, but takes into account the expanding services provided to upgrade the already high standards of our educational system. We must not regard improvement of the university as a luxury item. It is essential that we induce our young people of college age to stay here in Alaska. To do so, we must provide the facilities for a first-class education in the fields of endeavor which need more qualified personnel to develop our state, as well as to carry out the functions of business and government. These facilities must meet, in all respects, those available in the first 48 states. We must have faith in Alaska, in its young people, in its future, and in the educational system which functions so efficiently in Alaska. The ceremonies here today are but a single link in the chain of Alaska educational development. We must dedicate ourselves and our resources to the task of maintaining and strengthening the academic status of the University of Alaska, as well as the growing public school system of our state. Unless we elect to do so, it is useless to talk about educational and cultural advancement. By maintaining our faith and pledges, and asking to carry them out to completion, the future is assured. Thank you very much.
Governor Egan, President Wood, distinguished guests, and ladies and gentlemen. The earliest date of significance in the history of the University of Alaska is July 4, 1915. On that date, Canada Labs Number 162, free and accepted nations, conducted the ceremony for the laying of the cornerstone for the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. Another significant date in the university's history is July 6, 1949. On that day, Panama Labs 162 officiated at the laying of the cornerstone for the Geophysical Institute, which in its short lifetime of 15 years has become a world-known center of scientific research. Accordingly, when the arrangements were concluded for the erection of this great building, popularly known as the Gymnasium, the Board of Regents of the University passed unanimously the following resolution. Whereas the Masonic fraternity has performed throughout the ages the laying of cornerstones to certain public buildings, and whereas it has performed this ceremony on various occasions in the erection of buildings of this university, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Regents of the University of Alaska to request the laying of the cornerstone of the health, physical education, and recreational facilities by Panama Labs Number 162, Fairbanks, Alaska, free and accepted nations from Washington. Ladies and gentlemen, as President of the Board of Regents, it is my pleasure at this time to invite the Most Worshipful Brother Charles W. Johnson, Grand Master of the Most Worshipful Grand Lodge of Free and Accepted Nations of Washington, to conduct the ritual for the laying of the cornerstone.
And time immemorial, it has been the custom of the fraternity of free and accepted nations on invitation to lay with their ancient ceremony the cornerstone of buildings being erected for the worship of God, charitable, educational, and sanitary purposes, or for the administration of free government. No man should have ever done any great and important undertaking without first invoking the blessing of deity. So, Grand Chaplain, you lead us in prayer.
Almighty, eternal God, creator and upholder of the universe, who in the beginning laid the foundations of the earth, the heavens are the work of thy hands and the children of thy creation. We too create and make, plan and mold. By thy kind providence, we are assembled here today to lay this foundation stone. Thou, O God, knowest our needs in this present work. In thee is our wisdom, in thee is our strength. Vouchsafe to us, we implore thee, grace, wisdom, and understanding, that we may discharge the solemn duties of this hour to thy honor and glory. We fervently implore thy blessing on all who shall be engaged in the erection of this building. From this cornerstone, well tried, true, and trusty, may the good work advance to completion in peace and harmony. And to thy name will we give all the praise, both now and forever. Amen.
Right, Worshipful Brother Grand Secretary, it has been the custom on occasions like the present to deposit given a cavity in the cornerstone certain memorials of the period in which it was erected. So that within the lapse of ages, the fury of the earth, or the slow but certain ravages of time, should lay bare its foundation. And enduring record may be found by succeeding generations to bear testimony to the energy, ministry, and the culture of our time. You will now deposit within the stone the memorial prepared for that purpose, the list of which you will proceed.
Well, first of all, Grand Master, this copper box, properly sealed from the ravages of time, here near my feet, and to be deposited within the cornerstone of the Physical Education and Recreation Center of the University of Alaska contains the following memorial items. Some coins of the day, a dollar, a half dollar, a quarter, a dime, a 5 cent piece of a penny. A copy of the news weighty for the dates of October 15, 16, 18, 19, 1962. Copy of Jensen's Weekly for October 17, 1962. Copy of Polar Star, January 12, 1962, September 28, October 5, 12, and 19, all of 1962. Copy of Denali, 1962. Roundup News, October 18, 1962. Copy of the Alaska Alumnus List of October 1960, October 1962. Two ROTC shoulder patches. Army patch of the University of Alaska patch. Copy of the ROTC Cadet Guide, ROTC Medal Unit Patch. University of Alaska Decal, the seal in the nook. This official basketball handbook of 1962-63. First aid handbook. A recording of Alaska flag song. University of Alaska fight song. University of Alaska alma mater. Fact sheet on the bond issue, number 4, voted at November 8, 1960 election, and passed, making the building of a new gym possible. A copy of the letter sent to all candidates for state office by the Alumni Executive Secretary on October 11, 1962. A copy of the sample ballot of the general election, November 8, 1960. A copy of the report by Frederick H. Boyle, a gymnasium for the University of Alaska. Faculty bulletin published, issued by President Wood, naming the committees for Cornerstone Lane ceremony for the new gymnasium. Copy of the invitation for the Cornerstone Lane ceremony for the new gymnasium as of October 20, 1962. Copy of the program of the Cornerstone Lane ceremony. Copy of the Farthest North Collegian of April 1, 1962. Program for the dedication ceremony for original Cornerstone on University of Alaska campus. And photograph the Cornerstone Lane ceremony, which occurred on July 4, 1915. A picture in history of the Grand Master of Masons, Charles W. Johnson, of the Most Virtual Grand Lodge of Free and Accessible Masons, Washington. A copy of the roster, the members of Tamara Lodge on 162 FM, and surveys. A copy of the address of the Grand Orator. The 1962-63 University of Alaska catalog. The program log for the opening day of KUAC. Gold souvenir dollar issued when Alaska became the 49th state and good in trade for 1 year. Progress pictures in the construction of the health, physical education, and recreation buildings up until the laying of the cornerstone as of this date. A copy of the proposed budget for the University of Alaska for the year 1963-64. And a copy of the program for the groundbreaking ceremony, which occurred in April 1962.
Most worshipful Grandmaster, I present you the working tools of operated masonry, which are considered by our craft as the most valued jewels of the lodge. Symbols are important truths and teaching lessons of wisdom and morality.
Right, merciful brethren, with your assistance and that of the craft, I will now proceed to lay this cornerstone according to the custom of the fraternity. I also, for the Grand Marshal, you will assist me in lowering the stone. Governor of the state of Alaska was now symbolically said by the Smith.
This would not be complete without the presence of the university. That's the word.
Is it?
This is her. She's the best one in the world. Not to be outdone, as Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Washington, when you ask her, I will now be seated. That was for the Deputy Grand Master. What is the proper view of your office?
A square.
What is its role and its sonic use?
To square our actions by the square of virtue and to prove our work.
Apply that implement to the cornerstone, attest its value and workmanship, and make report.
Most worshipful Grand Master, I find the stone square and well fitted for its use. The craftsmen have performed their duty acceptably.
Most worshipful Senior Grand Warden, what is the proper view of your office?
The level.
What is its use?
Morally and Masonically, it teaches equality. It is used to lay horizontal.
Apply that implement to the cornerstone and make report.
Most worshipful Grand Master, I find the stone to be level. The work of the craftsman has been well done.
What was the junior Grand Warden? What is the proper jewel of your office?
The plum.
What is it use?
Orally and Masonically, it teaches rectitude of conduct and is used to try perpendicular.
Apply that implement to the soil sides of the cornerstone and make report.
Most worshipful Grand Master, I find the stone to be true and plumb. Craftsman's work is well performed.
This cornerstone has now been tried and tested by the proper implements of masonry. The craftsmen have well and skillfully performed their duty. And I do now declare this cornerstone well formed, true and trusty, and properly laid according to the ancient ceremonies of our craft. let it now be consecrated.
I scatter this corn as a symbol of plenty. May heavenly blessings be bounteously showered upon us, and ever inspire the hearts of our people with virtue, wisdom, and gratitude. Amen. I pour this wine as a symbol of strength and of gladness. May the great ruler of the universe bless and prosper our national, state, and city government. And may our union of states be preserved and cemented. A bond of friendship and brotherly love which shall endure through all time. Amen. I pour this oil as a symbol of peace and joy. May its blessings abide with us continually. May our Father in heaven shelter and protect the widow and orphan, shield and defend them from the trials and vicissitudes of the world, and so bestow his mercy upon the bereaved, the afflicted, and the sorrowing, that they may know sorrow and trouble no more. Amen.
And may the old body of Father of the universe, destined inhabitants of this place, with an abundance of the necessity, convenience, and comforts of life, assist in the erection and completion of this building. Protect the working against every accident, and wall the world this structure from decay, and grant for all a supply of the corn of nourishment, the wine of refreshment, and the oil of joy. Amen. Having raised the cornerstone of this structure, I now return to you the implements of operative masonry in full confidence of your skill and ability to perform the important duties entrusted to you. To the unimaginative man, the ceremonies we are performed may be dull and meaningless, but to the thoughtful student, who are covered with the symbolism of the building of human character, in that sense we are all architects. And as I return to you these implements of operating mystery, I admonish you use them carefully in superintending the erection and completion of this temple building. And I charge these, my brethren, to use them in a symbolic sense, to try and test each thought, each word, each action, that no stones may be laid in their spiritual beliefs that are not just, right, and true. I would like to deviate from the ceremony for a minute and ask the President Rasmussen if he wouldn't step forward. President Rasmussen, on behalf of the Grand Lodge of Washington, but more particularly upon your good friends and neighbors, is telling our Lodge number I present you this silver crown and these vessels and trust that they may become a part of the souvenirs you may have of this occasion.
Say that I accept these treasured symbols as great memories of this occasion and your coming to be with us in this installation and ceremony.
Now, Mr. Brother Grand Marshal, you will make the proclamation that this cornerstone has been laid in ample form.
I have been directed to proclaim, and I do now proclaim, in the name of the Most Worshipful Grand Lodge of Free and Accepted Nations of Washington, that the cornerstone to this health, physical education, and recreational facility here to be erected has this day been found square, level, and plumb, and has been laid in ample form, agreeably to the ancient customs and usages of the fraternity.
On occasions like the present, we are always favored with the timely remarks by our Grand Orator. Today, we are particularly favored in having our good brother, Charles Baker, who was the Grand Orator a few years ago and who resides here locally, to act as the Grand Orator on this occasion. Brother Baker.
Thank you, Most Worshipful Grand Master, Board of Regents, and friends. I'm going to pass this back here. On July 4th, 1915, a cornerstone was laid on this campus, not far from where we now stand. It is the evidence of things hoped for, that someday on this grant of land, an institution of higher learning would be erected to take care of the educational needs of generations yet to come. It was to be the destiny of this stone that it would never be a part of any building, to stand solitary and alone while a great university developed around it. Fate was to play still another trick on this important stone. In the hurry and rush of a new excavation, it disappeared and was forgotten. Then the god of fair beginnings took over. The stone was remembered, retrieved, and a few short weeks ago, in one of the most beautiful and impressive ceremonies ever witnessed on this campus, it was given a place of honor on the memorial plaza, a monument to those early pioneers who had the courage to put a dream into motion, and an inspiration to every citizen to every student, to the alumni, to all the staff, to our regents, both past and present, and to every faculty member who has helped and is helping to make that dream come true. Truly, the stone which the builders refused has become the headstone of the corner. Today, we have witnessed an impressive and inspiring ceremony. The placing of the cornerstone of this health, physical education, and recreation facility, a much-needed addition to the campus of the University of Alaska. It is the first building to be erected on this campus under a general obligation bond of the state of Alaska. By proper application of the more important tools of architecture, we are informed this stone is square, level, and plumb, and correctly laid. With this assurance, we know that as the horizontals and perpendiculars of this building are extended, we will have displayed before us a building of ever-increasing beauty and usefulness. Symbolically, the cornerstone must be perfectly square and in its form a cube. The square is a symbol of morality, the cube of truth. Symbolically, we place the cornerstone in the northeast corner of a building. In ancient times, the north was considered a place of darkness, the east, the source of light. Thus, placing the cornerstone in the northeast corner symbolized the progress from darkness to light, from ignorance to knowledge. It is very fitting that an occasion such as this should be accompanied by a ceremony embracing a symbolism brought down to us through centuries of cathedral builders, reverent and dedicated men. Their leaders, well-skilled in the arts and sciences. Of all the craftsmen in the many guilds of medieval Europe, it was the stonemasons, the stone carvers, and the master architects only who had full and unrestricted liberty to travel in foreign countries to work and receive master's wages. These craftsmen laid the cornerstones and on them erected many beautiful buildings. Cathedrals, buildings, bridges, and arches. Never did they build walls or fences. Many great cornerstones have been laid down through the ages. Certainly to be numbered among the greatest is the cornerstone of this republic, the Constitution of the United States of America. Deep on that stone are cut the words freedom and education. For surely, to maintain and advance freedom, we must have an ever-increasing, intelligent, and informed citizenry. Our pioneer ancestors had horsepower, and our republic is great because of the ideas they established for its home, its schools, and its democratic community life. The future of America depends on our standing by the ideals that have made us great, magnifying the importance of the home, building up our public schools, keeping alive and strengthening among our citizens the spirit of our heritage of freedom. A very definite obligation attaches to each of us to support to the best of our ability our public schools. This university is a part of that system. A great responsibility rests with those who direct the affairs of this university, for those charged with the instruction of the students, and with the students themselves, to resist with all their strength and with all their minds any attempt that might be made to diminish in the slightest our freedom to read, our freedom to learn, our freedom to think, our freedom to express our opinions. Don't ever let these words of Thomas Jefferson grow dim in the hearts and minds of free men. I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. In a great horseshoe bend of the Okemosee River in Georgia, there once lived a drove of wild hogs. Where they came from, no one knew. But they survived floods, fires, freezes, droughts, and hunters. Then a stranger came to the country store on the river road and asked the whereabouts of these wild hogs. Several months later, he came back asking for help in bringing out the animals, which he had penned up in the swamp. Bewildered farmers and bounty hunters gathered to view the captive hog. It was all very simple, explained the stranger. First, I put out some corn. For 3 weeks, they would not eat it. Then some of the young ones grabbed an ear and ran off into the thicket. Soon they were all eating. Then I began to build a pen around the corn, a little higher each day. When I noticed they were all waiting for me to bring the corn, and that they had stopped grubbing for acorns and roots, I built a trap door and caught them. I can pen any animal on the face of the earth if I can get him to depend on me for a free handout. The wild hogs had learned the hard way that there's no such thing as a free lunch. When God created the oyster, he gave to this humble bivalve a greater measure of built-in security than was given to most of his other creatures. The oyster's house, his armor, completely surrounds his otherwise vulnerable body, providing safety from most of his natural enemies. Thus secure, the oyster dwells among countless thousands of his kind on the tidal shallows close to shore. When he hungers, he has but to open his front door, and the currents and eddies bring him a plentiful supply of everything he needs. Happy, happy oyster. When God created the eagle, he provided him with pinions with which to seek his livelihood and with talons with which to secure it. And he said to the eagle, "You're on your own. The sky is the limit." In the infant days of our republic, the founding fathers chose the eagle as a symbol of the new nation. Let us keep that symbol. You are on your own. The sky is the limit.
Thanks very much, Brother Baker. Again, you have not failed us. So the Grand Chaplain, you will pronounce the benediction.
The Lord bless us and keep us. The Lord make his face to shine upon us and be gracious unto us. The Lord lift upon us the light of his countenance and give us peace. Amen.
This concludes the ceremonies of the Cornerstone Lady. Brother Marshall, you will form the procession.
Craftsmen, form in procession in columns of two.